The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence. The bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty, for yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Welcome and welcome and welcome to this service, this question box service, where I don't actually need this because I prepared nothing at all. It's amazing, right? It's great. And that's what I ask of you. I am Reverend Andrew L. Weber, and I ask each week for us to come together to bring our full selves. And the reason we did this special this day is because in between Christmas, where we have a large celebration on the 24th, and in between the first, oftentimes there's a lull when we're with family, when we're home, either joyous, sometimes sad, oftentimes lots going on. And so for me and for the volunteers who make this happen, I say, take a break. Yeah, we might have some slides up there. Yeah, we might have an order of service, but like, we don't have to do that much work. So today we are embodying shared ministry, which I like to talk about a lot because all of you are going to help make this service what it is today. That's my welcome. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make a service. We're going to make worship. We're going to be confused. We're going to probably have some fun. We might offend each other. Hopefully we'll come back into caring community when that happens. But first, who would like to come up and light our chalice? Oh my gosh, I'm asking for participation. Come on up. Yeah, come on up. Oh, we have two. No, that's okay. We have lots of lights. I have a chalice reading. Lillian, why don't you light the chalice, and then Kevin will do the peace lamp. So you just push this button and then touch it to that. It's really cool. A little further down. Yeah. We seek our place in the world and the answers to our heart's deep questions. As we seek, may our hearts be open to unexpected answers. May the light of our chalice here remind us that this is a community of warmth, of wisdom, and welcoming of multiple truths. And let us join in the lighting of our peace lamp. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Thank you so much. We also today have a menorah up here. And if you were here on Christmas Eve, we had a menorah, but it was unlit because the start of Hanukkah was on the 25th, the evening of the 25th. We have it now with four candles because tonight, if you celebrate Hanukkah, you'll be lighting the fifth candle. Is there anyone either who celebrates Hanukkah or who feels comfortable to come up and light our menorah? You don't have to be celebrating Hanukkah to do it also. Just, thank you, Tony. Feel free to take from our chalice.
We can first, light.
You can light. I did not prepare the Hebrew reading. I think you start from, yep, from that side.
Got tippy candles.
That's why we have a glass here. That's okay. Thank you, Tony.
And the tradition requires that we let them burn until they are done. Though anyone who has celebrated this all their life, who would like to correct that? That's my understanding.
Thank you. In the back are hymnals, which are optional because we also have the lyrics on the screen for the hymns. And we are starting our hymn with, "Though I may speak with bravest fire." So if you would rise in body or in spirit and sing with me, number 34. So I sort of lied to you. Maybe I didn't lie, but I sort of stretched what I said. I didn't prepare anything, but it almost takes more preparation to not write words to make sure that I'm in a place able to respond to what we're going to do, a place to be present to what is going to happen today. And what's going to happen today is a question box where there are little pieces of paper at the back. And I have some up here too. And I'm gonna ask you in just a moment, well, and whenever, actually, to write a question or questions down. And this can be anything. There was a young family here on Christmas Eve, and they said, what are you going to, like, can I ask anything? I said, you can ask anything. Like, your favorite color? I was like, that's fine. It's like, the meaning of life and death? I was like, that's also a fine question. So, like, this can run the gamut, the spectrum of what you're wondering about what this might mean. Some of you know. What does that comma mean on your stole? What is a stole? Why do you wear that? What's your belief in the afterlife? What is God? What is life? Why do you do this thing? What are we doing here? Like, really, I'll leave it to you. This is how we create a worship service. This is how we come together in community. We come with our questions. We come with our queries. We come with our experiences. And who knows, when I'm responding, I may call out to the congregation and say, well, I'm not sure. What do you all think? Is this a shared ministry? And to start us off, let's just talk about what is shared ministry? Because I use this term sometimes, and people sometimes ask me, like, what are you talking about when you say shared ministry? So what does it mean to you? What does that mean? You can shout out, you can raise your hand online, you can just type it in.
It means each of us may have something to contribute to the experience of the whole.
Each of us may have something to contribute to the experience of the whole. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, part of the sort of foundation inclusion idea of Unitarian Universalism is that we all have a say, we can all have our voice heard. Yeah.
We all have a responsibility to nurture this community.
We all have a responsibility to nurture this community, and that can be logistically too, and that comes from Mike, who is leading our sound, logistically helping this community work. Butch this morning came in and helped set up. Linda helped the slides and the order of service. There's a lot that goes on logistically, which is absolutely shared ministry. Other ideas?
Mm-hmm. I think that we need to be mindful of people in our midst that might need support from the rest of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Being aware of those around us, those in community who may need help or support. We have some specific people set aside for that, the care team, and they'll introduce a part of the service today. But it's not just them, it's everyone, that we look out for each other. And that's part of our shared ministry, the not logistical, the sort of caring, the loving. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could keep going. I could stand here for the whole service and say, what is shared ministry? Because they're it'd be hard for you, unless you were thinking of it, it'd be hard for you to get an answer that was incorrect. So it's like, that's not shared ministry. But for today, our shared ministry is asking questions. It's saying, oh my gosh, I was always wondering about, or why don't we have a service about this thing? So you may write questions now or later, and I will not give you answers. I will give you responses. That's part of that shared ministry too. It's like what I respond. Oh, there's a deer walking through our woods right now. I don't often say, don't focus up here. Look at the deer. If you're online, just imagine a majestic deer walking through our woods. Oh, maybe we can even take the camera over. Another one. This is part of ministry. Is yes, there's standing and talking and singing. It's also being aware of what's going on around us in the natural world, being aware of what's going around us in community. I welcome you all to this special, amazing, informal time. Zoom folks, we missed the deer, but I'm sure you can imagine it. It had a bright red glowing nose. And No, wait, hold on. So please, bring your questions, bring your ideas. You may write as many questions as you want. As you're writing, we will have a song by the Moody Blues. You can tell when I pick the song, sometimes it's like, oh, well, this is when Andrew was in high school. And, oh, this is when his dad introduced him to the 70s. Okay, so you get four non-blondes and Moody Blues today. And I forget which one's the postlude, but it'll be another one that's like, oh, okay, that's Andrew. You get to learn about me. So please, bring your questions as we listen to Question by the Moody Blues.
Is there a physical box where you can put
them? Absolutely. There is a physical basket you may pass around, we may put in through this service, through most services, but this one especially. Get up, walk around. If you're like, oh, my pen doesn't work, like, please throw it away, get another one. Put in the basket, just come up with a question later and hand it to me.
And for those of us on Zoom,
yes,
you can please use Zoom chat, either send the host a message privately or put it in chat openly based on what makes you more comfortable, and we can read them out with or without attribution and make sure they get added to the list.
Yes, questions are welcome from anyone. Thank you.
Do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door with a thousand million questions about hate and death and war? Because when we stop and look around us, there is nothing that we need in a world of persecution that is burning in. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way that you mean it when you tell me what will be. And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, lose the love I knew, safely lead me through between the silence of the mountains and the crashing of the sea. There lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there for me. But in the gray of the morning, my mind becomes confused between the dead and the sleeping and the road that I must choose. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, lose the love I knew, could safely lead me to the land that I once knew. Learn as we grow, the secret.
soul. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way you really mean it when you tell me what will be.
Do not feel like you need to be stopped because that part of the service moved on. If you have questions that you didn't quite get down or that arise, informal. Informal is the name of the game today. We have a responsive reading. It's in the hymnal, and I will move out of the way so you can see it. Number 652. This is one that, for me, has been very important. Both when I was a teen growing up Unitarian Universalist and now as a guide, co-leader in the faith journey about what maybe religion is all about, the quote, great end in religious instruction by William Ellery Channing. Where can I go? I'll go over here. I'll start in the first voice, and if you would please respond with a second. The great end in religious instruction is not to stamp our minds upon the young or others, but to stir up their own. Not to give them a definite amount of knowledge, but to inspire a fervent love of truth. Not to bind them by ineradicable prejudices to our particular sect or peculiar notions. Not to burden the memory, but to quicken and strengthen the power of thought. In a word, the great end of religious instruction is to awaken the soul, to excite and cherish spiritual life.
Amen.
One good thing about it being a little breezy with the fans or just with the temperature is that we will not have to wait long after the service for these lights to go out. Okay. As I was collecting the questions, I put them sort of in an order because there are some duplicates, which is surprising. You're like, what? But my question was, yes, you have similar things on your minds. I'm going to start with the more silly and then get a little deeper as we go on. And the first one I'm going to start with actually is very meaningful to what we just happened, saying, did you know? The answer is no, I did not know. But did you know that Question by the Moody Blues began as two separate song fragments? Singer Justin Hayward had stalled on a Vietnam War protest song, it was the up-tempo chorus, and a love song, which is the slower, softer verses. He realized that the two parts went well together, and voila, Question. I did not know. Thank you. And maybe the deepest, most important question, what's your favorite dinosaur? That's a good one. I really like the Ankylosaurus, which is the one that's sort of like a tank with a big ball on the end, and I don't know why. I'm sure if you were going to assess me, you could like figure out what that is, whether I'm like hiding from something or need protection or, I don't know, feel like I need to be big. I don't know. I like the Ankylosaurus. I also like those ones that we think ran and like headbutted into the other ones. Those are sort of fun too. Well, that says something about me. And online, are there any sort of silly personal questions that we can start with?
There are a couple questions.
If they're deeper, we can hold off a little bit.
There's a couple that are personal. I'm not sure about silly.
Yeah, let's go with personal. I'm silly.
My question for Andrew is, what made you decide to become a vegan?
Okay, good. What made me decide to become a vegan? I'm going to put that one after this one. Stay tuned for that answer. What attracted me to the tuba out of all possible musical instruments? Because if you were here on Christmas Eve, I played the tuba with our pickup orchestra, which was fantastic. We had a trumpet player, violinist, guitar, sax. It was really neat. And a flute, yes, there's a flautist also, or a flutist, depending on how you say that. And I play the tuba, and what attracted me, I started actually on the flute, and I think it was extremes. I think I was like looking for extremes. I was like, well, I got this small one, why don't I go for the big one too? And I started because I'm not a big person. I was not a big child either. I started on the euphonium, which is the baritone horn tenor tuba, the smaller one. And so that's the one I had. And then I graduated up to the tuba and I just really, really enjoyed it. So I don't know. And also it's less competitive if you're ever going sort of regional, national bands. So there are less people who play the tuba than the flute. So that was nice. Vegan. How did I become vegan? I was a stubborn little kid, if you can imagine that, little kids being stubborn. And I was also one with, I think, a strong sense of morality, if you can imagine that. And at one point, I was reheating meatloaf, and I saw the white of the fat before, like, you microwave it, and then it melts, and you don't see it. And I was like, oh, what is that? And my mom said, that's fat. I was like, oh, I don't want to eat that. I was like, oh, I don't want to eat any of this. So I think a nine-year-old, I really cut back on meat that was sort of red meat and for my health, but I mean, it was really because I was a stubborn little kid. I want to be different, right? I mean, that was not unhealthy, but it changed because of the sort of, oh, I'm being a vegetarian. I got PETA sending me stuff. I don't know how, but then it became like, oh, those poor animals. I don't want to kill them or hurt them, because that's PETA's whole big thing. People for the ethical treatment of animals, they're sort of militant vegetarians. And then over the years, it shifted and changed, and now it's more about the health of the environment. And so I've stuck with it, and I've become from vegetarian to vegan. I don't do any animal products, but I also try to be flexible. So I've traveled a lot to Hungary and Romania, and while there, being vegan would be offensive to people I'm visiting and unhealthy for myself, so I'm much more flexible with what I eat. But it's about economics and environmentalism and how we raise our animals for meat or for their products does not seem sustainable. So if it were done a different way, like going out and hunting, the deer may not be here right now. Like, for me, that seems like a sort of better, more moral, more in line with my views way to eat and consume animals. How did you become a minister? I grew up at Mainline Unitarian Church, which is in Devon, not that far away, and I think it's actually that way. I went to school for architecture, engineering, mathematics, and a little bit, there was a religion minor in there somewhere. I was bouncing around a lot, sort of, what am I doing with my life? After school, I traveled to Hungary, and I volunteered with Habitat for Humanity. And as I was volunteering for Habitat for Humanity, I was like, look, I'm using the architecture, the engineer, the mathematics, and the religion, because we're building community, we're building houses. When I returned to the United States, I thought, what am I doing with my life? And that's when I applied to a dual Master of Divinity, Master of Social Work program. Still thinking, do I want to do social work and therapy? Do I want to do ministry? And it was really through the education of those two programs that I sort of settled on ministry. I was always Unitarian Universalist. What are the four futures?
Well, actually, I have one that kind of relates to that. So if you don't mind, I'd
love
to jump
in. Yeah, jump in. If you have a question that's like related, similar, because he's online. He's not just saying, I have another question.
No. And it actually comes back to you introing things earlier. Great tunes today. Tell us about the scarf. I'm sure that's not its name. You wear for service and do feel a special vibe when you put it on.
Yeah, so it's a stole, and I prompted this one, I guess, and then I forgot about it. So it's called a stole. And this one is UCC, it's United Church of Christ. And the commas on this, they are commas. It's my punctuation stole, so if I ever go to a library to say something, maybe I'll wear this one. But they're a theological statement for that church, and they say, don't put a comma, or don't, I'm sorry, don't put a period where God has put a comma. Meaning that interpretation is still open. Yes, they use the Bible mainly, but they're saying that we still have our experiences, we still have our own revelation. It's not closed, revelation is not closed. I have many different stoles that each have different meanings. The one I wore for Christmas Eve, the red, gold, sparkly one, was made by my twin sister, who may be online, I could check, but she might be. But she created that for me, and it has different words embroidered in it. When I was working with the Partner Church Committee, doing lots of travel, it has the Hungarian word for God, the Philippine word for God, and Northeast India, because there are Unitarians all over, and I was organizing that travel. So they all have different meaning, and I absolutely do, I mean, feel something when I put it on, whether it's bless you, whether it's like the weight of like putting a piece of fabric around my neck, or if it's like, oh, now I'm really being called to be a minister. At my ordination, my religious educator, my minister of religious education from when I grew up, gave me her stole, which I occasionally wear, and she said, this is a stole for you, but know that you can never take off the sort of title of minister, of reverend. People will always, if they know that, they will interact with you in that fashion. So, yes and no. What are the four futures? I don't know. I don't know. So, does anyone else know? Yeah.
Well, that's the book we're going to talk about today.
Oh, great. There's a book gathering, the book meeting, today after service. If you've read the book, The Four Futures, or if you're just interested in knowing about it, hang out. It's also online, so the same room will be open, correct? And you can learn about the book, you can discuss the book. The Four Futures is that book. There you go. Here's one that I'll need more help to. I went from personal, and I'm going to communal. Are dogs allowed at the service? Are dogs allowed? We have a pet blessing service, specifically, usually in October, because it aligns with the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi. That's not why we do it, that's the tradition. So at that one, absolutely yes. At others, my idea is as long as you're not letting it roam everywhere, because there may be people who are uncomfortable with dogs, I don't see why not. Is there any other, what do you think, community? Are dogs allowed? Yeah. There may be people allergic to dogs, so it could be tough. At that one service, everyone will know there are pets, so those allergic wouldn't come.
It really would depend on the
depends on how well behaved the dog is. Yeah. So I think, as with anything, it's thinking of ourselves and thinking of others and how those impact. Yes. So Linda asks her dog every Sunday whether she wants to come, and I guess every Sunday she says no and stays in bed. Look at this. This is cool. Do we ever open the side doors to let air in during service? Can we have a service outside or with the doors open? Can we have an outdoor service? I'm sensing a theme. I'm sensing a theme, and I think that's fantastic. I think that would be great. Now maybe a little cold, even though it's not extremely chilly, but yes. The only concern I have or question is that, just like with the dogs, we just have to think about how that decision impacts other people. So if you have less mobility, it might be difficult to be outside. If you're online, I mean, we can point the camera that way and you can feel like you're with us, but just to make sure that we're open and affirming and accepting of everyone who's physically here and those who are virtually here. But yes, in other words, yes, we can absolutely do it outside. And we can open these up and have half in, half outside. I am open for pretty much anything, as long as we, yes.
Some years ago, we had the experience of a sacred dance evening with the doors open and a raccoon came.
So Tony's saying, years ago, they had a sacred dance evening with the doors open, and a raccoon came in the building? Into the building. A raccoon came into the building.
It appeared to be ill.
Oh, and the raccoon appeared to be ill. So, as with knowing how we welcome each other, recognize whom we may not want to welcome, like the rabid raccoons. Who would have known? Yeah, Phil, yes.
We have had services outside, okay? But it's very difficult. That side is like one step above a swamp.
Yes, that's...
You don't want to be out there.
Yeah, so we've had services with different ministers, and I know because I've walked here before. Right here, it's very wet. It's very low. A lot of water gets there. So unless it's a drought, it's hard to be directly there. There is a fire pit also, but that's further back into the woods, and then we probably have to check with the fire department maybe to get an okay on that, and then it's harder to get there. So the answer is yes and yes, but we have to make sure that we're still affirming, welcoming, and safe. Yeah, absolutely, we can open the doors. Yeah, and keep our eyes out for raccoons. Yeah.
I just want to remind everybody that we are going to have our June picnic in lieu of the service at our house again. So that will be outside.
So in June, this is a fairly regular annual happening. It moves around a little bit, but in June, we are having an outside, not here, picnic at the Lutweiler Weaver House. So look for that June. You have months to look at the calendar and know which day in mid-June. How do we foster connection? I mean, part of that is coming again and again. If it's internal connection with each other here, it's coming to our second Sunday potlucks, chatting with others. It's on potlucks, if you watch me, which some people do, I will go to one table and then I'll switch and move and move. So some of it's getting out of our comfort zone, because like even here, there are people whom I know better, people who you know better. And if we always talk to those people, you'll be close, and that's okay. But connection with other people means sometimes stepping out and be like, hey, I haven't met you, or I do know you, but I've never sat down and chatted with you. With any of these questions, if you feel that I did not respond adequately, if you feel that I missed some piece or that there's more to be said, please email, call, text me. We can sit down, chat, we can do something else, and there's one online.
Similarly heavy, open-ended, maybe ties back to your responsive reading, but what is the purpose of religion?
Mm. What is the purpose of religion? This is one that I'm going to push back on the congregation. And I'll have my responses too, but what do you all think? What is the purpose of religion? And that can be, as you see, broad religion, our religion. Spiritual community. Say it again.
For many, control.
For many, control. Religion can be control. Mm-hmm.
Hope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Peace of mind.
Like a way to understand like bigger things about the universe.
Yeah, a way to understand bigger things about the universe. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like a constant questioning and challenge, not challenging, but questioning, I guess.
So a way of looking at what's around us and this reality, and an interest in speaking with agnostic or atheist about where things come from. And I would say, I bet you can find some of those here. So like, let's have that conversation, not right now, but later. Yeah.
Well, the very root of the word is to bind.
Yes.
Right? And I think at its core, around you and so forth. Obviously, it's a tool of social control and has been for many years. It still continues to be. And what's unique to this particular denomination is the idea that you're not bound by a belief in a set of in certain beliefs. I believe in God, the Father, Almighty, Creator, Heaven, and Earth, etc.
So, yeah. So Jay brought up a couple of things. The etymology of the word, which I actually had a service titled this, religio, comes from one idea is to bind together, like ligature, that's a related word, to bind together. And whether that's a binding to something greater than yourself, so you could see it's a binding to a system of control, that some religions do that, is saying this is what you should believe and how you should act. Whereas our faith, Unitarian Universalism, doesn't have that binding to a specific belief or creed. And for me, I would say religion is putting us in touch with ourselves and with something larger than ourselves. And whatever that something larger than ourselves is, it's up to you to answer. Tony, did you have something? Great. Purpose of religion. Yeah.
I think for me, it's to connect with eternity. Hmm. And my place in that.
Absolutely. Connect with eternity and our place in that. That goes to this one. How will I use my time in my golden years? That's talking about that. What do you think? That's another one that I can give ideas, input about what life looks like in one's golden years, but that's an answer, a question that I would go back to people. So let's go on to eternity. Yeah. Yes, I can do that, and then I won't summarize anymore. So what do you think? What is our purpose? How do we live in our golden years? I will not limit this to those of you in your golden years, but experience is helpful.
I would like to do more volunteering to give back to community. Now that I'd have more time.
Volunteering to give back community.
I heard a poem that was holding grief in one hand and joy in the other and letting that stretch you large. So I think in your golden years, maybe you're experiencing more grief than in your earlier ones.
Oh, thank you, Lily.
I'm actually in my golden years, and I can tell you there are some tough adjustments. One is recognizing that you might be on the short end of the lollipop, it's kind of thing. Also, having friends and family die and you miss them terribly, and making your adjustment with that. Nobody wants to be the first one to die, and nobody wants to be the last, but you might be one of those. And so there's a great deal of adjusting that you do once you're over 80.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Not that I would know about golden years, but I think it has made me assign more gravity to the decisions I make in life now. Because if it's going to be the last thing I do, I want it to be consequential. I think I see my end of life more clearly than I ever did when I was in my 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, or even 60s. But now that I'm in my 70s, I want my life to have meaning and value, and that's why what guides me on a daily basis.
Thank you. And I know that Linda, she does so much for this congregation, and I know that sometimes when I ask her, others ask her for something, she's like, I don't have time for that, which is part of this theological thing of saying, like, look, this is my time in the world, and being aware of what you want to put your life energy toward. So thank you for saying no sometimes too, Linda. Mm-hmm.
I have found my relationship with time has changed because I am more aware that my time is limited. I don't know what that limit is. And that makes some of the decisions more difficult. Do I plan for another decade of life? Do I expect to leave this mortal coil tomorrow? But I value my time much more because I am aware that it is not infinite.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I would echo what she said, you know, how also kind of being in that, you know, getting in there, we don't know how much time is left. So the goal, our goal is to get as much joy and meaning out of the time that we have left and while we still can, you know. When we have our go-go years, it's, we're gonna go, you know, and then when we can't, then we'll do something else.
Thanks. Can you pass it down?
Thank you. Well, I've noticed now that I've gotten older, I'm 68, that I'm of two minds. One mind that I have, my thinking mind, my logical mind, I'm getting more forgetful. I can't count anymore. I forgot my spelling. But I got another mind that suddenly, like a wisdom. It's questions that I had that frustrated me when I was younger. Suddenly, little by little, the answers are appearing and I get it. Like something from a book that I couldn't get years ago, suddenly I pick it up and I go, oh, I get it now. Or something somebody says to me and I go, like, it opens up a whole door. And it's so, it's like, so I don't think I would trade for youth. I everything has its appropriate time.
Thank you. This is one more example of the shared ministry, of that coming together in community, being vulnerable, being open to what people are saying.
Okay, I have no idea when the golden years are coming. I mean, I don't feel like it's anytime soon. But what I'd like to know is, what the hell was it all about?
Well, so I already have that question in here. paraphrased. As we're doing this, I was going to shift a little more. Yes, in the online.
Oh, not online. I was just going to use this microphone so I don't make you run that one all the way back here. I hope that when I get to my golden years and they're some way off for me, that I have time to devote to something more than focusing on the mechanics of living, things like saving money, raising a family, paying for things. And I know that there's far too many people who, even in their golden years, have to worry about having enough income to keep food on the table or a roof over their head. And I hope that I will have an opportunity now to set up for giving myself room to explore things that I just don't have time for later, and hopefully the health to do so.
Yes, thank you. Should I, we can take a little poll, should I continue with the questions, responses, or should we take a hymn break and then come back to the questions? Who wants questions? Who wants hymn? Oh, okay, of course that was like evenly split, come on. I'll go, we'll do some more questions, then we'll sing a little bit. And as any service, if you're like, I got something I gotta be at, I won't be offended. You can go. You can also stay. You're more than welcome to stay. Is our congregation a sustainable size? What do we do for recruitment and retention? That's a good question. And that's a deep one, but in a different vein, right? So is it a sustainable size? That there are, of course, all sorts of matrices, and there are lots of data out there about what you need, how many people you need to be sustainable. It's about finances. It's about whether the money in and the money out are hopefully not just matched, but one is higher than the other, the in, right? Treasurer, do we want the in higher, right? So that's part of it. Now, what do we do for retention and, I mean, proselytizing, I guess, or trying to get new members? Unitarian Universalists are inherently bad about this one thing, right? We believe in the worthiness of everybody, so why am I going to push my faith on you? That's tough. Also, hopefully, we found something of value here. Hopefully, we've found something in the community, in the questioning, in the responding, not just today, but every day. So why don't we share that? That's a hard one. What I've seen is the best way to grow a faith community is to do church well. You don't get a big billboard. Like, people know we're here. I get texts from people like, I saw your name on the church signs. Like, yeah, it's out there. Like, people know we're here. People come and visit. Some of them come back. That's not it. It's not the billboard. It's doing church well. So if someone comes in and say, oh my gosh, they live their values. Oh, I saw them at the AIDS walk. Oh, they gave a lot of money to the mitzvah circle. I know that church. And when I come in, I'm challenged. And I'm expected to be supportive and challenging to others. That's what grows a good church community. Yes.
And I would add to that, we have someone with us on Zoom today who is going to be helping to organize a strategic planning effort. And so as a congregation, we are going to ask for everyone's eventual participation in making sure that we have, to some extent, an answer to that question in the form of a strategic plan.
So strategic plan, and that goes with what hope do you hold for yourself and this congregation in the coming year, and I'd put an S there, 2 years, like, it's living into our best selves, and part of that's the strategic plan, like, what do you want to be? I'm not here as a leader, a faith leader, but also walking together with the community. Yes, Vice President.
Give a shout out to Lorraine Lee and Ann Rostosky, who every year lead our pledge drive. And that is a part of sustainability, the nuts and bolts of the fellowship. Obviously, we have to do church well, but also we have to pay for the church that we do well. And that's a critical piece. So again, we're looking for anyone who would like to help us with the pledge drive. And what that is for new folks is, people look at their finances and say, when you think about making a budget for TPUF, I'm going to be able to contribute X number of dollars each month to help you do that. So some folks want to pledge, some don't, some just donate as they will. But I will always say that what we actually take in has always exceeded what people pledge. So people look at their finances and they say, you know what, I can afford to give more than I pledge, or they haven't pledged and they give. So that has really helped us sustain. I would like to just say we're having a good month in December. Thank you.
Church is logistics, and it is the big, deep questions. What is civic duty? Right, I mean, we're not gonna throw softballs here. Being part of community like Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, is that fulfilling our civic duty or civic responsibilities? What do we do, or what maybe should we do as a church community or a faith community? So I think that's a two-point question. What's civic duty as an individual and as a community? That's a good question. And that's another one that I push back on you. I'm not going to have you respond right now, but to think about what is required of me in my community. What is required of me in my faith community? What is required of my faith community in Collegeville and Eagleville? What do we do here? Should we do more or less? We donate books and winter clothing and food and money. We support the AIDS walk. We donated to Mitzvah Circle. We could do more. We could host. I know that I was talking with Jeff Fisher about a church he is involved with, and it has AA meetings, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts meetings. Throughout the week, it has all sorts of community events where it supports the community. Some congregations are able to do that, some are not. Is that part of our civic responsibility and duty? That's a mirror holding that up to you. I feel religion or spirituality is internal, a melding of heart and mind. In my teens, this person writes, I turned away from Catholic Church and that sort of, quote, organized religion. I'm happy to have found the open community of Unitarian Universalism. Yes. No, sure. Thank you. Great comment. And so many of us, it's called a chosen faith. I mean, if we take a poll, who here grew up Unitarian or Unitarian Universalist? One, two, three. Three. Who here came after another faith or non-faith? Right? I mean, we're a chosen faith. We're not good at proselytizing, which is why so many grow up and leave, but we're good at welcoming. So the story is almost universal. What place does Jesus have in your theology? I love Jesus. I think he's a great guy. And I say that like to be funny, but also like I really like Jesus as a brother, as a teacher, as a rabbi teacher, as divine, just as much as each one of you are divine. So yes, the Son of God, whatever God means, but also children of God. That's where most people who say they are Christian would say, Andrew, you're speaking heresy. I'm okay with that. Because I think he was divine, just as I think we are all divine. What are some ideas for dealing with long-term grief? Grief, long-term grief. Reaching out, being in community, knowing that me responding to this is not enough, right? So having a therapeutic relationship, absolutely. And as we spoke about the golden years, bless you, the golden years question, we all will have things in our lives which we lose, which are taken from us, whether that is our abilities that I can no longer do what I wanted to do, whether that is a loved one, an object, we will have loss and grief. Sharing that experience with others, I think, is one of the only ways we can deal with that, especially a long-term grief. And just as I said before, if this is not enough, which it cannot be, let's talk, or please talk to someone, reach out to our care team, to a therapist. We can give you resources. What do we think about an afterlife? Is our earthly experience our primary one? It's one of those great questions where it's on you. And it's so frustrating. It's like, just tell me what's going to happen. Like, you're in the wrong religious group for that. I'm just going to come back with more questions. What do I think? Oh my gosh, I have no idea. what happens after we die. Some people say we keep our consciousness. Some people say, this is it right here, this is it. And some people say there may be something and there may be not, but we focus on what we're doing now. It's all over the place. And it's one of those unanswerable questions that some religions say, this is why we exist, is to help you answer the unanswerable. For us, it's to say, we will hold you in care, in love, in challenge. We will support you as you look for your own answers, as you look for your own truth. What happens when I die? Let's sit down. Let's talk about that. That's deep. That's big. I heard the meaning of life is 42. It's like what Phil said. I heard the meaning of life is 42. What do you think? Absolutely, 42. That's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference. It's a fantastic, funny, irreverent, very deep at points to book by Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And there's one scene where they figure out the meaning of life. And there's this huge program, the Earth, which gives you the meaning of life. And the answer is 42. Oh, but we didn't get the question right. And for me, the meaning of life is our lives. So even asking that question, we reframe it of saying, I'm answering the question with how I live. That's what I would say. It's like your meaning in your life, you make that answer. You're creating that answer.
In one of the very distant sequels to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they discover that the question is, what is 8 times 7?
Yeah.
Which is, of course, not 42. So maybe that's a good reason to consider that either the question or the answer requires more investigation.
Yes. And that reminds me of what the postlude song is. So please stay for the postlude. I know it's a well-loved song by some of you. I'm looking at Jerry because I know he knows that he's played it, Let the Mystery Be. And that's part of what we're doing here is we're having mystery, we're having questions. It's said that some religions you come to have your questions answered. In Unitarian Universalism, you come to have your answers questioned. But in community, with love and care. Those were my responses. Thank you for helping to create this amazing, challenging, wonderful, funny service. And let us sing. Let us sing. What are we going to sing? Love Will Guide Us. Hymn number 131. You may rise in body or in spirit for 131.
Tony Black, I'm glad you're all here. It's been a morning of questions, but there are some certainties. We gather together, at least in part, because we care about one another and want to be in touch with one another. And because of that, each Sunday when we gather, we take some time to share the highs and lows, the concerns of our lives. And this is that time. If you have something you wish to share, something that worries you, concerns you, pains you, that you'd like to bring to community, if you have something that's a source of joy and affirmation in your current life that you'd like to share, come here, tell us who you are. In many cases, we know who you are, but remind us. And there's, on any given Sunday, there may be someone here who's never seen you or heard you before. Let them know who you are and share what it is that's important to you that you want our understanding or participation in. There may be something important and moving for you that you're not ready to be public with, but you'd still like to speak with someone. Andrew, of course, is available for those who need his help, and so are the members of the care team. We're sometimes listed in the newsletter. Some of us wear the care team hearts on our name tags. Others wear one of the splendid buttons that Phil has made for us. Or you can pick up on your way out the card that's at the table by the door that tells you how to get in touch with the care team. There are a couple of ways you can do that. Now, shall we join together in song, our traditional Spirit of Life? Who has given us the breath of life. Today we remember to breathe deeply, to rest, to take in, to pause before we act, and then to take in another deep breath, poised on the edge, and risk jumping in, risk taking action, risk speaking up, risk using the gifts we have been given, so that at the end of our life, we can say with absolute clarity that no part of our existence was wasted in fear of failure or in fear of success. Hold us. Prepare the way to begin to offer the gift of our awakened presence, full of love and light today. These and the prayers of our hearts we lift up now in this silence. Amen.
Thank you, Tony. Our closing hymn today is number 95, There Is More Love Somewhere. So you may rise in body or in spirit to join in singing There Is More Love Somewhere. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard. The path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. Amen, and blessed be.